Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager, and this is the Heretics Hour live this Monday, April 2nd, 2012. We just missed April Fool's Day. It came to my attention, and it doesn't seem to be as big a deal, though, as it used to be, maybe because it's most popular with kids, and I'm not a kid, nor do I have kids around. Or maybe because we're being so seriously fooled every day that it's like every day is April Fool's Day. But I was glad that the program didn't land on April Fool's Day. I'm going to be with you for the next 2 hours. I have a wonderful guest who's coming up in one half hour from now. He is Kairos from Germany. And I will take your calls for Kairos in the second hour. Please call only if you wanted to direct a question or a comment to him. In the news, just a couple of hours ago, there's something that I read that I want to mention before I get into my reading from the fire. I read a headline that a Christian school in a diverse city of Oakland, California, had an incident with a gunman who killed 7 persons and wounded 3. The headline read, 7 dead, 3 hurt in Christian school shooting. So I read the story, and I found out it was a Korean private school of only 100 students located in one building that specialized in preparing Korean immigrants to get jobs in the community. The shooting took place in a vocational nursing class. The school secretary said the courses ranged from theology to Asian medicine. Another student was in an English language class when she heard gunshots. The university is called Oikos University, and it says on its website that it offers courses in music and nursing. The school's accountant said many of its students go on to work in nursing and ministry. So ministry and theology are the only words that come close to Christian, but yet they don't say Christian, do they? This is clearly a place, this little school, for Korean immigrants to learn or improve their English and to learn some skills for getting a job in, say, nursing homes and elder care, for the most part. They don't mean training that they're training real nurses, but nursing home workers. So this is another example of how the media fools us every day with this headline that this all happened at a Christian school. So this is something for those of you who collect these stories of how Christians and white people the media wants to blame us for everything that goes on. So this is a good example of it. Excuse me for coughing. I'm not going to go on to reading from the fire, and there is no fooling in this. It is, or it was, all too real. Tonight I'm finishing up chapter 2, which is, as I've told you many times before, is called Strategy. And it is some pretty powerful stuff. I began this portion last week, which takes place in March on the Eastern Front. Always before, we've been talking about the war in the West, the bombing war, the bombing campaign in the on the Western side. But now, at the very end of this chapter, Friedrich moves to the Eastern Front for just a little bit and says that basically what was going on. And it was an effort to help the hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of ethnic Germans escape from the advancing Red Army. That's basically what the Wehrmacht was doing in the East at this time. Now, I read last week, and since I moved on ahead into this part just a little bit, I read that among these were the survivors of the Wilhelm Gustloff ship that was torpedoed by the Soviets and sunk. It was full of course, German refugees trying to reach the other shore and get away from where the Soviets were, and that was sunk, and there were 900 survivors who were now amongst all these hundreds of thousands of survivors that were trying to get onto boats, ships of various sorts, anything that floated, to get away from the fighting. And Friedrich also, in part I read last week, mentioned some girls who were in a hospital, 11 to 13, who were raped, had been raped repeatedly by Soviet soldiers. And we know, most of you know, how that went on. They weren't just girls 11 to 13, but any female from the age of about 5 or even younger to 95. But I will continue now, starting here. It's in the Bay of Pomerania, which is around the Baltic Sea there. And the Bay of Pomerania was teeming with ships of all kinds. I'm on page 147. People were packed in the cargo hatches of the freighters. It was cold and stormy. The waves came over, soaking their clothes. Everyone longed for the landing in Swinemunde, where heaters glowed and they could dry themselves. The more comfortable Winrich von Nieprode, that is a ship, of the Hamburg-America line, got stranded at the port on the night of Sunday, March 11th, since it had run out of coal. Christel Bispink, what he's doing in this part is he goes back and forth among several people who he has gotten their story from. So she's the first one, so you have to kind of notice when it shifts from one person to another. Christel Bispink did not want to board the ship in Kohlberg. Quote, "since I was there when the survivors of the Wilhelm Gustloff were brought ashore," unquote. Stalin's organs, or the Katyusha multiple rocket launchers, that's a weapon, which had shot Kohlberg to pieces, were in no way inferior to the torpedo cannons of the Red Fleet. Christel says, "we endured together shivering in the shelter for 5 days, and then went towards the port, which was under constant fire. Russian strafers attacked the Dnieprode. Now it was stuck there in choppy waters, and Christel Bispink wished she had listened to her intuition. Pastor Osa from Virchow in East Pomerania, probably Virchow in East Pomerania, was also stuck without coal on his steamer with 4,000 passengers aboard. Our eyes wandered far across the bay with its green waves to the bluish hills of Usedom and Wolin, past the numerous ships that were lying with us in the roads." I don't know why they call them roads, but they do. I mean, they're in the water. Below deck, straw mattresses, one against the other, cowered old East Prussian farmers, injured veterans, and a woman who was obviously slightly disturbed mentally, who unceasingly continued to sing three or four soft tones. To the right and left, smaller refugee ships steamed on ahead to Swinemunde. Half of East Prussia was at sea. Anything that could float was loaded with people. Christel Bispink could take a deep breath early Monday morning. The Dnieprode was loaded with coal, and the huge tub was set in motion. She says, "hope immediately started budding, but it was totally unfounded. At 12 o'clock, the alarm sounded. The deck was cleared. Airplanes had been reported with their course set for the Baltic Sea, Swinemunde. When the alarm of the Plantage Coastal Battery reported heavy air units flying in, Cadet Sander was drilling a parade step with his platoon since a funeral march was scheduled." Cadet Sander is another one who's going to be referred to in these pages. This was a bunch of new cadets who were just training to join the fighting, you know. Our advance scout, he said, on the island of Wolin, a lieutenant, had fallen and was supposed to be buried that day with military honors. The battery manned their three guns right away, but the order was withdrawn since the approaching units had split up over the water and were now flying much lower than usual. When the bombers were less than 12 miles away, the firing was stopped. He said, "we were too slow because our First World War era artillery could only be aimed and loaded manually. So the next order had the cadets racing to their one-man foxholes, which had been dug out before the position in the park. The cadets were not on the ships. They were on land in a park. Most of the refugees were camped along the wide belt of spa gardens. This is what they're talking about here, that bordered the strip of beach. The 8th U.S. Air Force knew that, which is why they had loaded lots of bombs with contact fuses that caused tree bursts. They detonated as soon as they came in contact with anything, such as branches. The Allies were better informed about Usedom than about any other area of Germany because of the V2 site in Peenemünde. At 3 a.m., Hugo Lechau had arrived with the refugees from Pribenau in the county of Kamen. They had made their way via Wolin and had to get their carts across the Swinna River. Crossing it was an arduous endeavor because there was only a ferry there. The bridge had been blown up long ago. When Lechau heard the air raid alarm, he tied up the horse firmly and went back to his cart. A short time later, the bombs wailed down and the airborne weapons hammered. The Pribernauers, these are the people from Pribernau, crawled under their carts. The hellish noise increased the danger that the horses would bolt and the carts would roll over them. So the men unhitched the horses and held them by the reins, standing behind the carts and hoping not to be hit by bomb shrapnel. Quote, we watched one bomber after another fly over the harbor area and the wagon trains and released their annihilating bomb load. When it got quieter between approaches, you could hear the screaming of the injured and the whinnying of the hurt horses, unquote. Pastor Ose listened. He was on a ship. Pastor Ose listened to the bombers roaring louder and louder above the ship. We were all sitting in absolute silence, and I imagined what it would be like if right at that moment the bombs hit our ship and it would sink. No one would ever know what had happened to him. The war caught up with us again, thought Crystal Bisping on the Dnipro. The enemy squadron continued to thunder above us, releasing their deadly load onto the city and the harbor. The blazing flames and the black clouds of smoke rose to the sky. We were familiar with this sight from Kohlberg, she said. In reality, the war had by no means caught up with her. The lack of coal had kept the ship from entering the annihilation zone. So the point is that these ships that had run out of coal and were stuck in the middle of the sea and couldn't get to the harbor on the other side, which is where they were going and wanted to go there, were actually the lucky ones because if they had arrived at the harbor, they would be those who were being bombed right now, as many of the ships were, by the U.S. 8th Air Force. They distributed life vests on Pastor Ose's steamer. There were only enough for a few women and children, he said. Cadet Sander, in his foxhole back in the park, could see how refugees in the park were throwing themselves to the ground, and now their entire bodies were being exposed to the fragmentation effects of the tree bursts. The markers had outlined the park clearly with flares, making the carpet of bombs especially dense, so there was no escaping it. At the banks of the Swinna, in the endless line of vehicles from the trek, Dietlinde Bonlander was waiting with the people from Fritzau in Pomerania for the bridge to be repaired. She, it's a female, Linda, she fed the horses. The swaying of the pontoon and the muffled sounds were hard on them, on the horses. The city was within sight, and through the thin morning mist, she could see the bombs falling. When the strafers came, the Fritzauers threw themselves on the ground in horror. They had not yet experienced this senseless hunting down of people. Isa Berg and the people with her from Labiau, who had trekked along the beach from East Pomerania, had constantly encountered the bombs. They mowed down the refugees. Mama yelled, somebody said, Mama yelled, get down, and protectively threw herself down on the youngest. During their rest in Swinemunde, the family found a place to sleep in a railroad car. And now this is a quote or a description from that family. We children sat on the floor. We heard the pre-alarm warning, but I don't remember the bomb raid at all. When I awoke, it was dark. People were lying on me, and I couldn't get any air. I wanted the boy lying on top of me to get off, but he just groaned loudly and got even heavier. Whenever I reached out with my hand, it felt all gloppy. When they pulled me up, I saw my brother sitting there, but the top of his head was gone. Ten-year-old Martin Kruger and his mother had been waiting for four hours at the train station. They had slept overnight on the road as they walked from East Pomerania and were happy to get something hot to eat in Swinemunde. They had sauerkraut and decided to stay another day. During the air raid second wave, Martin got hit by a piece of shrapnel that tore open his left carotid artery. His mother said, his last words were, Mama, what's happening? Excuse me. I immediately applied pressure to the artery, but he had already lost too much blood. The trek of the Pribbernauers also got in the strafer raid at the Swinne River. The hedgehopper planes flew along the road to Pritter and attacked people and animals. Here's a quote. Among the dead people lying around and the perished horses, the injured were calling for help and water. Some asked for a cigarette. Our village was hit hard, 18 dead. Crystal Bisping could make some observations from her spot on the Kniep Road. To our amazement, we saw far fewer ships. We didn't find out until after the war that 13 had been sunk in the harbor area. Pastor Osa was lucky. He's on a different ship, of course, from Crystal. Pastor Osa was lucky thanks to thick cloud cover. We later heard that all the refugee steamers in the harbor had been sunk or transformed into floating coffins. Of the larger trading vessels, the Jasmine, the Hilda, Ravensburg, Heiligenhafen, Tolina, and Cordillera had been sunk, as well as the Andros, which suffered the greatest losses. It had been put to sea on March 5th in Pillau along the Sambian coast with 2,000 passengers and was bound for Denmark. On the stormy trip, they ran out of drinking water and food. The freighter docked in Swinemunde on the morning of March 12th. Eva Jansch came from the besieged Königsberg and had laboriously made her way to Pillau along the road that had been fought open. See, some of them were on foot. She thought that she had gotten through the worst when the sounds of the bomber engines started to swell. Quote, they had dropped their bombs before we even realized what was happening. The firebomb started a fire, and in no time, the bow of the ship was red hot. The refugees, that's the end of the quote. The refugees were split up into two holes. When the ship broke apart in flames, the holes were flooded. There was only one ladder to the deck, and hundreds of people rushed to it. It could not withstand the weight and broke. The crew threw down ropes, but no one made it all the way up. Water was spilling into the ship from all sides. Right after that, there was an eerie silence. The icy wave had swept over the people. The next day, the cadets were divided into groups to recover the bodies from the park. Among the bodies that our group found in the park, there was not a single soldier, one cadet said, just women, children, and a few old men. In fact, however, at another area of the park, there were also units of troops headed southward to the front at the Oder River, but the hedgehoppers made no distinctions in the 10 seconds of their machine gun fire. The cadets had performed various drills, but had never before heard a bomb drop. And they had never practiced anything even vaguely close to what really happened in a raid. He said, at first, it was as if everyone were paralyzed. It was often impossible to identify those who had been injured and mutilated. Quote, we had orders to look for identification cards in the clothes of those who had been killed before they were transported off, unquote. Those who could not be identified but had usable clothing were stripped, since there was a desperate need for clothing among the refugees. As cadets were recovering the body of a woman who had given birth during the raid, they noticed the uninjured baby hanging dead from the umbilical cord and dropped the corpse in shock. The raid involved more than 1,000 aircraft, 671 bombers and 412 escort fighter planes, and 1,609 tons of munitions. Based on the local official count, 23,000 people had been killed, a figure that is hard to fathom. Was it half that amount or a third? There are few clues. The Andros supposedly took 570 people down with it, but there are no further data relating to the harbor. A total of 1,667 victims could be named, but far more were never identified. They were never counted because new waves of refugees continued to come in. The remains were buried in bomb craters or carried away in wagons to mass graves on the hill of Golm. The total number of deaths on the ships, in parks, on treks, at the banks of the Swinna, at the train station, or on hospital trains might be in the five-digit range. As I say, Friedrich is always trying to stay within the politically correct limits. The massacre at Swinemunde is not recorded in the annals of the U.S. 8th Air Force as a massacre, nor is it recorded so in the annals of world history. The U.S. Air Force listed it as a transportation raid on marshalling grounds. Right after the country was occupied, a commission of the U.S. Armed Forces drew up the United States Strategic Bombing Survey, summarizing the Allied air war. They were surprised at the number of dead. Such civilian losses were unprecedented, but still, quote, far removed from the generally anticipated total of several millions, unquote. Well, make out from that what you will, but that is the end of that chapter. And the next chapter coming up is titled Land, and it's very long, and it's divided into four parts, northwest, south, and something else, east. and it mostly tells about all the... Well, it says a lot, but it goes through in great detail what was destroyed, like in the way of buildings, and, you know, a valuable old architecture going way back and so on, something that we don't even have here in the United States, where I am, in the way that they had there. So I don't know how I'm going to handle the reading from here on. I was looking through it. And trying to figure that out, and I still hadn't made any decision on what, you know, because there's so much here, and of course I have to just pick and choose. I can't go on with this forever, so I will do the best I can in that. And I'm glad I have a few minutes left, because I want to mention something that I was reading last night from the latest Barnes Review magazine of March-April. And I read an article in the back of the magazine by Daniel Michaels, who has one in there, seems like almost every issue, but he's always good. And it's entitled The Flensburg Government at the End and the End of the Third Reich. And it talks about the government that was formed after the capitulation, it was actually formed at the time that Adolf Hitler committed suicide, and he said that, and he put Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz as the new Führer and his leader, and he passed by Göring for reasons that I won't go into right here. But I think, and this is good for what some of the things that Kairos will be talking about too. So I have, I think, 2 minutes. It looks like to read some of this, which I'm going to do. And it says, contrary to public opinion, starts out, The Third Reich did not end with the ostensible death of Adolf Hitler on April 30, 1945, nor even with the formal surrender of the German generals during the subsequent first week of May. In fact, this surrender occurred under the authority of the legitimately appointed successor German government, the so-called Flensburg government. It was called that because that's where they located themselves, in Germany, that was established by Hitler on April 29th, the day before he allegedly committed suicide. The Third Reich continued to be recognized until May 23rd. All right? The war officially ended. The surrender was signed on May 8th. And so between then and May 23rd, this government under the fine man of Admiral Dönitz was going on. And on May 23rd, the Allies abruptly dissolved the Flensburg government, arrested its officials, and established U.S., U.K., French, and U.S. Military governments. Well, I have to stop there, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe I'll be able to talk about this some more next week.
We'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Next, though, anti-war activists have held a day of action in key British cities to warn the authorities against a potential attack on Iran. A similar rally is expected in the capital of Israel, which is leading calls to strike over Tehran's nuclear program. Campaigners fear the mounting pressure could escalate into all-out war if it all goes very badly wrong, the effects of which would reverberate globally. Let's talk about this now with British MP Jeremy Corbyn, who's also a member of the Stop the War Coalition, which organised the UK protests. Jeremy, very good evening to you. Thanks for being on our RT's. Appreciate it. We've witnessed these protests today. We've seen other recent ones too in Britain and the US. The UK at the moment saying it wouldn't back an Israeli strike on Iran. The US has also signalled there is still room for diplomacy. So why are you so worried?
Because the rhetoric that's building up in the USA, because of the breakdown of diplomatic relations between Britain and Iran, and because of the deployment of naval forces from most Western countries in the Gulf at the present time, and the danger that comes from that, and the instant rebuttal of most Western governments of everything the International Atomic Energy Authority says. What we're keen to point out is that there is a serious danger of conflict with Iran. We need diplomacy, we need dialogue, but above all, we need an aspiration of peace and understanding in the region, not another war.
Well, of course, the whole background to this, Western powers saying Iran is concealing the development of a nuclear bomb, Israel insisting an attack on the country is the only way to foil such plans. Now, given the hostile relations between the two states, I guess there's a kind of an argument. I'm not saying it, this channel's not saying it, but some people argue that surely Israel has a right to take measures to protect itself.
Israel has 200 nuclear warheads, has a delivery system, has a research reactor, and certainly has the capability of bombing with nuclear weapons Iran or indeed any other country in the region. Israel is also not a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran is and remains so. The last NPT review conference agreed on a nuclear weapons-free Middle East and determination to achieve that. That would mean some kind of debate or conference that involves Israel. I think the way forward has to be de-escalating the tension, denuclearizing the region. Otherwise, somebody somewhere is going to develop a nuclear weapon. I don't believe Iran has a nuclear weapon. I'm not even sure Iran wants to develop a nuclear weapon. But isolating Iran, allowing Israel to continue with these threats, and also allowing the assassinations to go on of nuclear scientists in Iran, when Iran has a legal right to develop civilian nuclear power, it seems to me a very, very dangerous development indeed.
I mean, echoing on what you're saying, there are intelligence agencies in the US and Israel are thought to agree that there is not enough proof right now to determine if Iran is building a nuclear bomb. You're saying...
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I want to introduce my very special guest now from Germany. He is known as Kairos to the readers of his blogs and to me. Hello, Kairos.
Hello, Carolyn.
So nice to hear your voice. I know people are going to really enjoy what you have to say tonight. And let me just ask you first why you call yourself Kairos and why you don't use your real name.
Kairos is a Greek god in ancient Greek myths, the god of the right opportunity. If you act too fast, you will fail, but if you don't act at all, you will fail too. And why we all use pseudonyms and anonymous is that we cannot say the things we say by our real names, because the government will jail us for it.
Yes. At the very least, you will be fired from your job, and you do work for a living. You do, and I won't say any more about you. Tell us about your blog and your fellow bloggers, to what extent you would like to do so. Your blog, Asterschwerter.
Our blog is Asterschwerter, which means Ace of Swords. Our project began as a translation project. We translated essays of the author Fjordman, then those of other authors from American or Norwegian and British websites. And in the meantime, we write our own essays too. Presently, our chief of staff, Deep Roots, is translating Kevin MacDonald's Culture of Critique. I think you know this. Mm-hmm. Our new member, Sternbald, has just published an article about atrocity and effeminacy. Schattenkönig is working on a project about the nuclear bomb, a working title, The Jewish Bomb. And Ozzy Bandia translates a trilogy about the history of money, where the history of the House Rothschild and its doings is told. I myself am working on a text about God and how I found back to him. Let me give you something, some links to where your listeners can read something. If you look on kairostiosblogspot.com, that is kairostiosblogspot.com, there's a sidebar with English content, with the first interview I gave to you and my text White Grass. You can also look on Age of Treason, an article called Fjordman Fallout, where Tanzstaffel says something about us. And you can read on our blog, As der Schwerter. It's schwertasblog.wordpress.com. There's an article from Counterjet to Ace of Swords, where we say how we came to from being counterjihadists to being nationalists.
Yes, okay. Explain just for a minute, if you would, to some of our listeners might need to not be real clear what counter-jihad is. Some, of course, are, but you never know who's listening and who will be listening to this in the future. So how did you change and what brought that about, if you'd like to tell us, from being counter-jihad to what you are now?
The scene of the counter-jihad is somehow there are people who criticize Islam. We have 10 to 15 million Muslims in Germany. No one knows how much exactly. Of course, we are not allowed to have national feelings. Yes, we cannot say we want to be Germans in Germany and so on. This is all forbidden to us. So many people just think they can criticize Islam to rescue the West, but it's all a fail, because criticizing an ideology will do nothing about it, because the Muslims grow more and more. They have 4, 5 to 10 children, where we have per woman only one child. So they will outnumber us, and then it will be no matter if they are strong Muslims or if they are even Christians. Then Germany will be a Turkish land, an Arab land, and it will be no matter which ideology they follow, because there will be no more Germans. So this is fail with the counter-jihad, and this is what we all had to discover, that it is important to save our people, to save our blood. And this is something that you cannot say in Germany if you want to exist, if you want your existence. Because if you talk about blood, everyone says, oh, this is Hitler, and right, then you are dead, at least socially dead.
Yes, and so anything to do, of course, I think everybody knows that, anything to do with Hitler is considered criminal, is outlawed, so you can't say a single positive thing about him, or you have broken the law. Well, what about... I wanted you to say a few words, if you would, about the Beita Chape and this terror, supposed terror cell, the NSU, the National Socialist Underground. And, you know, in my opinion, this is a trumped up thing in order to come down harder than before on the right wing elements in Germany and any parties that, like, they want to ban the NPD, things like that. What would you have to say about that from your point of view?
There are two aspects of this. I try to keep it short. The one thing is how Chepe, she is in jail. How is she? She's offended by the other prisoners, at least by the 90% of them who have no German roots. The light of her cell was on for 24 hours a day, so that she cannot kill herself secretly. This torture ended a few weeks ago.
I try to
convince comrades to do something about it, to give at least a sign of solidarity or something. But the media was so successful with satanizing Chepe that even in the rightist corner of the right wing, there are very few who stick to her. I wrote an open letter to Ms. Chepe that many readers of our blog liked. I came to these conclusions in my letter. One, if Chepe is guilty or not, if she is, no one can know. We cannot know this. Until a court convicted her, she has to be seen as innocent. For everyone else, this rule is in place, but not for her. Why? Second, if helping the NSU to murder people, that does not mean that she has no more rights, or that it is just to torture her, nor does this mean that she loses her nationality or the right to be a member of the German community. It only means that she will have to serve a sentence. And I think there will be no lawsuit. This is aspect two, because... I think all this about the NSU is lied. There are so many lies about this Döner murder. This means kebab killings. They really call it like this. They called it kebab killings. Everything on the story stinks. The Turkish police is still assuming that the 9 Turkish men who had been murdered from 2001 to 2006 are murdered by the Turkish mafia. It was about betting debt, they say. No one cared about the killings, the victims, or their loved ones until the story of the Nazi terrorists was made up. 5 years after the last killing, Uwe Mundlos and Uwe Bernhard do a bank robbery and kill themselves with a rifle, in a camper, where all the weapons of the long-forgotten murders lie in a row. Beate Chepe burns down the house where she lived with the Uwes, and everything is burned except a DVD with a video where the Pink Panther confesses to have murdered those people and where the logo NSU is shown. No word or sign of Bernard Mundlos or Chepe on this video. Everyone with a brain can see this, that this is a setup. They have they do this bank robbery 5 years later, and they've all the weapons of the murders in this their car.
Yeah.
Now there are speculations that the Verfassungsschutz, Inner Secret Service of Germany, an organization primarily built to prevent nationalism and struggle for freedom, was involved. That the trio worked for the VS, that another man, an agent of the VS, did the killings, and so on. But a few weeks later, it does no longer matter. Our Chancellor, Mrs. Angela Merkel, stands in front of a black curtain. For every victim, a lonely candle is burning, and now she's bubbling about how ashamed we are, and so on. I could not even hear or read the speech, nor watch it on TV. I cannot bear to hear those lies anymore, because the situation in Germany is so bad you cannot imagine. Perhaps you can. You have similar problems with your blacks and Hispanics. But every day, young Germans are robbed and attacked with knives by Turks. Every day. Every week, we hear of gang rapes. And with we, I mean us, those who know how to use the internet and read police reports. In the German mass media, there's not a single word of these crimes. Gangs of Turks rape and violate little German girls, cut them, insert things to them so that they cannot bear children anymore. And no one cares, because no one outside of the right scene ever hears about these crimes. And when they do, the average Germans cannot classify these crimes correctly as actions of warfare. They are told every day that the Turks are an enrichment, that multiculturalism is such a divine thing or something. And everyone who says different is a racist and a hate monger.
Well, all right. Now, we cannot assume that Germans want this to be happening to themselves. So what? Where do you look in Germany for the culprits, or really all around the world? But can you say, I mean, what is behind all of this destruction of nationalities? And we have it here too in the United States, and it's in France, it's in Great Britain, it's everywhere going on, everywhere among we're in former white countries.
Yes, I think it is going on everywhere, because it's brought by the same people everywhere. They are everywhere. But here in Germany, it is the greatest taboo. In the States, they are acting openly. You can see them as Jews fighting for Jewish interests. Here in Germany, to speak out the word alone, Jew, is seen as heretic. So it's kind of funny that this show is called The Heretics Hour. I watch my kinsmen beginning their sentence with a Jewish girl. They cannot say Jew. Mm-hmm. Yes? Mm-hmm. It is like saying Hitler. It is just a taboo. Hitler, to say Hitler is a taboo too. But they are everywhere here too. Very few of them are openly known as Jews, as Michael Friedman or Marcel Reich-Ranitzky. Most of them hide it, like many politicians. Joschka Fischer and Daniel Cohn-Bendit are just two of estimated 80% of Jews in the Green Party. This party started in the 80s with many conservatives who wanted to save the environment. But they took over the party, demanded to allow sex with children, and made it a communistic platform. Other well-known politicians are Jewish too, like Wolfgang Thierse. It is possible that Helmut Kohl has Jewish ancestry too. There are rumors of him being born as Henoch Kohn. I have seen the grave of the Kohns with a six-pointed star, but this is not a proof. Some believe it, others not. But if you look at his actions, you get a glimpse of who he is. If you know that in 1982, Kohl signed a NATO strategy, a paper, where the atomic destruction of whole Germany was planned in case of an invasion of the Red Army, yeah, there you have a clue. no one would eradicate his own people. As I said, it was better to be dead than red, but we speak of a plan to make an atomic desert out of Germany. The first wave would have been soldiers with knapsack nuclear bombs, the second and third wave, tactical rockets from Paris and the Normandy.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you distinguish in Germany between Jews and communist Germans, or these very leftist Germans? Is there a distinction to be made there? Are they all? Are they so many of them covert where they can't all be? I would say a large number of Germans who are in politics are just going along with who is the successful ones, and so they're social democrats and so on, and they go along with that. But how would you describe the distinction, if there is one, or how it is between Jews and Germans who are not Jewish at all, but are just sold on the communist left wing agenda?
It's a difficult question. Let me see. First thing is we cannot divide it properly because we are lied at. Yeah. Most people say in the right wing say we fight against left. I say every time no. We do not fight against left. We fight against the Jew. But as long as these people are our neighbors, our colleges and superiors, we will be slaves. It's just like in the movie They Live. I do not know if you know the movie. It's an alien elite that sits unknown in every important position of media and politics, works together with traitors who get good money for it.
Yes.
Only that these aliens are not from outer space. This is it. And most people cannot see who is behind it. And if I speak out aloud, everyone will see me as a hate monger just because I say Jew. It is a trigger, a moral trigger. Mm-hmm. That you cannot speak about it. But we do not say they are all guilty or let's kill them all or something. We just say there's an ethnic group, a defined ethnic group who has its own interests and fights for its own interests, and these are not our interests.
Okay, yeah? Very good. Yes, that's true. Would you say a few words about the new president of Germany, President Gauck?
No, I won't.
Oh, okay.
He's just like the others before him. I'm not very interested in him. He's just like a statue. He's something who greets people, and he has not really a function. The political function of the president in Germany is like the queen in England. Mm-hmm. Our president is not like the president in the USA. He has no political power. The chancellor, Angela Merkel, has the political power like a president. And our president is just someone who shakes hands.
Yeah. So they make a big deal out of it, but it really doesn't make any difference, does it? Okay. It's just a symbolic. Well, let's move on, because you didn't want to spend too much, the vast majority of time on this. You wanted to talk about German law and freedom of speech in Germany. And I know you've said to me that there's freedom of speech for the Turks, but there's not freedom of speech for the Germans. We've got six or seven minutes. So what can you tell us about in that time?
I will read out something from our Strafgesetzbuch, the criminal code. This is section 130, agitation of the people. Whoever in a manner that is capable of disturbing the public peace incites hatred against segments of the population or a single person because of his belonging to the segment, or calls for violent or arbitrary measures against them, or assaults the human dignity of others or a single one by insulting, maligning, or defaming segments of the population, shall be punished with imprisonment from 3 months to 5 years. The same is in number two, if you do this on scriptures, books, or on the internet. so I won't read it out again. Number three is whoever publicly or in a meeting approves or denies or renders harmless an act of genocide committed under the rule of National Socialism shall be punished with imprisonment to 5 years. Number three was added at October 1994. And number four is with imprisonment to 3 years or fine. One is punished when he publicly or in a convention disturbs the public peace by hurting the dignity of the victims by approving of, denying or rendering harmless the National Socialistic Reign of Terror. This was added in April 2005. Let us discuss some interesting aspects of this law. It seems that German law is not made to provide justice. It never was meant to provide justice. It seems that German law is made to prevent disturbing of the public peace. What does this mean, this public peace? Most people think it's about law and order, but that is just the half of the truth. Germany is an occupied country. In 1945, the German Wehrmacht, or armed forces, did surrender. But there was never a declaration of peace between the Reich and the winners. Germany was not reinstated in 1949. All German territory was occupied by the Allies. Nearly 6 million Germans died of hunger between 1945 and 1947. So they died of hunger after the war was over. It was no liberation from an evil regime. It was genocide, nothing else. They wanted even kill more of us. Mongtow's plan was to build a state of farmers with some hundreds of thousands of people. They did not realize the plan of Marshall out of humanistic thoughts. They just thought they would need us against the Soviets. So they did not Mongtow's plan, but Marshall's plan. But a newly freed sovereign Germany could have developed an own will, so they built the Federal Republic of Germany. Our state is nothing but a construct of foreign rule. This background enlightens why the public peace is more important than anything. The occupator dictates the occupied people to not disturb his reign. Within the context, other curiosities of German law are explained easily. Why does a child rapist go to jail for just 3 years, but illegal downloads can bring one to prison for 5 years? Why tax fraud is punished harshly but may not? It is because the money of the occupator is worth more than the dignity or even the lives of the occupied Germans. Why there's kind of a foreigner bonus when it comes to punishment. Foreigners who beat, rape or kill Germans get suspension of sentence on probation, and Germans who commit thought crimes go to jail for 12 years. The 72-year-old Horst Mahler got 12 years for violating Section 130. It is not or not only that our judges fear revenge from the families of the sentenced foreigners, it's just that German life is worth nothing. And bringing a Turkish murderer to jail for life could disturb the public peace. In Berlin, a German who was attacked by 20 Turks killed one of them with a knife. It was self-defense. Even the justice of our rotten state could not deny that. But now every Friday there are thousands of Turks in Berlin demanding justice, crying Allahu Akbar and celebrating their martyr. So if you kill a German, public peace is not in danger. But if you kill a Turk...
It is. Yes, I see. So so I understand this, that the whole law... Are you still there, Kairos?
I'm here.
Okay. The whole law is based on disturbing the public peace. And that is because it is an occupied country. I want people to understand, you know, I want people to see the connection there. If this was a real nation, the laws would be made for the safety of the nation and the well-being of the people who live in it, which would be basically the Germans, and all. But it is an occupied country, and so under occupation, the only thing they're concerned with is keeping the peace. You know, under any occupation, after a war or a conflict of some kind, the whole purpose of what the occupiers are doing is keeping the peace, right? It's like a super police, military police. And this is what we have kind of instilled into the law now in Germany, which has never changed since then. It has never become a constitutional nation. And that's why it has these kind of laws, and why people cannot understand how this can be going on in Germany and why the Germans put up with it or why the Germans would support it, you know, why the Germans in power, the German government support it. They need to understand, in order to understand it, you have to understand that Germany is not just, we're not just calling it that. It really is legally an occupied nation, occupied by the Allies, but mainly the big gun of the Allies, the United States.
There never was a declaration of peace.
No. And that's what this article that I started to read is about. It's about how there was a government that would have continued to be a German government, you know, after Hitler, based on what was before, but they were arrested and put on trial, and then the occupation took over instead. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back to talk about some more interesting.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Feature story news in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Police in California say at least 7 people were killed when a gunman opened fire at a religious university in the city of Oakland. Several people were injured and are being treated in local hospitals. The incident took place at Oikos University, a school that teaches theology and nursing to predominantly Asian students. The suspect, now in police custody, is believed to be of Korean descent and aged around 40. FSN's correspondent Rachel Silverman is in Oakland.
The suspect is a 270-pound man who was taken into custody in a shopping center in Alameda, about 3 miles away from the shootings. He's reportedly a Korean-American man in his 40s. One witness says the suspect is a former nursing student at the university. Oikos University is a private adult school which offers classes in religious studies, music, and vocational nursing. Many of its students are of Korean descent.
The Syrian government says it's agreed to implement a UN Arab League peace plan, beginning with a ceasefire no later than April the 10th. Kofi Annan, the special envoy to Syria, told the UN Security Council that he's still uncertain whether the peace agreement will hold. And Susan Rice, the US ambassador to the United Nations, expressed skepticism that Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad will live up to his commitments under the agreement.
Mr. Annan said he wished that he had this confirmation of action sooner, in other words, that the April 10th deadline would ideally have been earlier than it is. But he urged the government of Syria to start immediately and to ensure that forces move no further into population centers. And as he related, that commitment was provided by the Syrian authorities. Mr. Annan reported that he's expecting details from the Syrian government very shortly on the other aspects of his 6-point plan.
The United States says it's too early to say whether any existing sanctions on Burma, the country that's also known as Myanmar, will be dropped, despite the victory of the opposition National League for Democracy in weekend polls. From FSN's Washington Bureau, Daniel Wrenches reports.
This by-election may have encompassed less than 7% of the country's parliamentary seats, but the White House is describing it as an important step in Burma's democratic transformation. The National League for Democracy is expecting an easy victory for leader Aung San Suu Kyi in her constituency south of Yangon and the majority of other contested seats in the country. U.S. State Department spokesperson Victoria Nuland indicated that they were holding back on judgments about whether sufficient progress had been made for promised reciprocation like paring back sanctions.
I don't have anything to announce here in terms of our next steps in terms of action for action, but we'll be looking at that.
The White House says it's an indication that the government of Burma intends to continue along the path of greater openness, transparency and reform. Daniel Wrenches, Washington.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. We'll be right back.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Jaeger, and my very special guest tonight is Kairos from Germany. And I want to invite you to call in if you have a question or something that you want to say to Kairos. So the number is 1-855-477-2283. All right, Kairos, you were talking about German law. I think you're still talking about that, right?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands that we are forced by law to demonize Hitler, and not only him. Number 4 of section 130 says that every German person living within 1939 and 1945 is guilty. This is all shame and guilt. I would gladly criticize Hitler and National Socialism, but what is the meaning of critique? It means that I look upon actions, thoughts, reasons of someone, and upon the consequences of his actions. And then I build an opinion about him, his actions, thoughts, and reasons. This is why we read books, to get to know the thoughts of others. But we cannot do this with Hitler and National Socialism. Sorry, we cannot read his books because they are banned, and we are forced by law to demonize him and all his followers and the whole of the German people of this time. Critical historic research is not possible under these conditions, and the same is with Section 3 with the genocide. We just have to believe everything that they say. And if you look on different historians, how they count the killed people, they all say different. But we just have to believe.
Yeah, you're talking about the 6 million number of Jewish dead, supposedly. And you know, I was reading tonight about all the many thousands of Germans and what the kind of suffering they went through. And this was just one little part at the end, because it was going on from 1942. And it, of course, it got worse and worse in the bombing. And all of that, there's no, the suffering that the Germans did in that bombing was worse than anything that Jews went through. But you're not allowed, we're not supposed to be talking about that, and that's never talked about. And when you say...
You can read at the German Wikipedia an article, Opferzahlen der Konzentrationslager Auschwitz. There stands that Kogan, the historian Kogan, spoke of 3.5 to 4.5 million.
Yes.
Gassed in Auschwitz alone. Reitlinger says that 600,000 were gassed and 300,000 more died in the camps. Gilbert says 2 million were gassed there, and so on and so on. I will not say anything about this, but you can see what this historian said.
Yeah, the historians talk about it, but in the media, they act like it's not nobody questions any of it, and there's no discussion about it, and everybody agrees that it's exactly 6 million, because that's because of who controls the media, and that's the narrative.
There are even people like Robert Forrester who doubt it all, but they cannot say it. Not only in Germany, in every European country, it's you get punished if you question it.
Yes. Well, another thing that I think should be made clear is that when you said that in under German law, no one can speak well about Adolf Hitler. He has to be demonized. That includes the leaders of the country. That includes everyone, basically. And they take that very seriously. And that is not necessarily always people at the highest level. They've decided to go along with all that. But it's not necessarily what they believe or what they would want to say. But everybody's under that obligation.
They force us to say things, not only with Hitler, but with other things. This political correctness is not a kind of being polite or something. Political correctness is a weapon, a communist weapon, to brainwash people's minds. When you have to say out loud what you do not think, then you subordinate yourself. Yeah.
This is true of Merkel. This is true of all the leaders too. I mean, we're not saying whether whether they are happy to go along with it or not, but they would not be able to not go along with it. They would not be able to speak any differently than they do, any more than you can.
If someone of them talks about the four things, it must be Hitler. It can be that someone talks about banks or about whatever. When they talk about the four things, they get cut off. They will no longer be politicians, and every one of them knows. So they just talk about the things they should, and we are all are happy. They get their money for being politicians, and we get lied to as we are used to.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, where do we go from here? We know what the bad situation is, and it's we have a bad situation here too. Not as bad as you do, but bad. And what are some of the positive things we can do? And what is the most important? What are some of the most important things to you in your philosophy?
To show you this, I brought a song from a German band named Carpe Diem. It's not my band; it's just a band I like. A band that never was in breach of Section 130, but had to suffer horse searches, spying on them, confiscation of their instruments, and so on and so on. It's a song about important things, about unity, about liberty, about pride. As it is in German, I will read the translation to you first before we hear the song.
Do, please.
Children of the North. Do you hear the flute of the old man? He walks from place to place playing it. From everywhere they run to the marketplace and listen to his word. I sing to you about old days, about the people long gone. The unity has carried it, and deeply in itself it carried the pride. Freedom was the greatest property, and loyalty was the highest duty. Its faith gave it the biggest courage, and cowardice they did not know. However, then it came differently after some time. Evil came to the country. A foreign god brought infinite grief. Dissension was all that was left. Life was despised now, and all the law of nature. The soul of the people benighted because it lost its gods. The children, they listen to the legends of the old man, the man with the white hair. And all those parents hear tensely because his legends are true. So listen to the song as well, and listen to your intuition. Since from these people there you come also, the gods live in you as well. Odin, don't you hear the cry of the children of the North? Odin, when will you liberate us from slavery?
We have a caller, Kairos, and Mike thinks we should take the caller, because he's on the line now. So before we listen to the music, and you can refresh us again, let's take the caller and see what he has to say. Welcome, caller. What is your name, and what do you have to say to Kairos?
Hi, Carolyn. It's Tan Stoffel, and hi, Kairos.
Hi.
Hi, Tan. Hi, Tan. Nice to hear from you.
Very nice to hear you, my friend.
Nice to hear your voice, too. I wanted to tell you, Kairos, you sound a lot like my cousin, one of my cousins who lives in Germany, and I'm looking forward to meeting you someday when I travel back there.
Yeah, like that.
One point, first of all, I'd like to praise you and offer you wishes for strength in your struggle. I'm very heartened to learn that there are nationalists in Germany who believe the things you believe and are on the same page as people like Carolyn and myself and the people who listen to this show. And you're doing good work, and keep it up. one thing that came up in the last half hour was this idea of how many Jews there are in Germany and whether the problem is Jews. And, you know, this comes off often when debating with people, you know, what is the ultimate cause? Is it some sort of illness of white people or is it the Jews? And usually people ridicule that idea and they point to countries where the problems are very similar and yet there are very few Jews. And I think it's not really that the Jews have to be physically there, physically pulling the levers. But I think that even in Germany, where there are enough Jews, surely to cause trouble physically, it's the ideas. It's this poisonous idea that white folk or European folk of any nation have no right to their own nation and have to open up their doors to everybody and imagine that everybody is a German. In your case, you have to act as if these Turks who don't really like Germany and Jews who don't really like Germans are Germans just because they speak German or happen to live within the borders of Germany. And that's the poisonous idea. That's where it starts. And that's what's really illegal to oppose. That's where the crime begins, is when you start to say, hey, wait a minute, these people aren't part of me. They're not us. They're not German. And the minute you oppose that, that's when you cross the line and become a criminal.
You are. I did not really understand you good. I understood some things. You said all European people are from Germanic descent in one way or another, and I totally agree to that. We are white. If we are Scandinavians or most of the Americans have German roots, and even the Englishmen and Germans are not very of the same descent, and we are different than other races, and this is something that have to come to the consciousness of people, of white people again. That we are different than the others. It is not only about culture and something like educational things. It is about our genes, our DNA, and this determines our actions. And we are just different. It's not about the color of the skin alone.
Yes, and Kairos Tan was saying that it is that we are forced, we're sort of forced to say that this is not true. That these people who are not us can be us or have become us because they now are citizens in our country or they speak our language, that makes them us. And this is what he was saying was that if we deny that, if we don't go along with that, we are criminalized for it. And
yes,
this is the problem.
This is the New World Order. The New World Order is more than a plan to abolish the national states and establish a world government. This world government will be controlled by the Jews, the only homogeneous ethnic group that will remain. Though I do not think that they are race, but it's in their prophecies, and they have other views of prophecies than we have. They do everything to make their prophecy true. They think they are chosen to rule above all the world.
Yes, yes. Okay, Tan, did you have anything else you wanted to say to Kairos?
No, that's it. I just wanted to make a brief call, and thanks, guys. Good show. I'll let you go now.
Thank you very much, Tan. We have another caller, Kairos. Let's go ahead and let the other one come on, and we will get to the song that you want to play for sure. Hello, caller. Are you there yet?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah?
Yes? Yes? Can you give your name?
My name is Paul. Do you need my last name?
No. Hello, Paul. Just ask Kairos what you want to ask him.
All right.
You have your radio on. You see, you have to turn your sound off. You have to turn the program off or something because it's in the background.
All right. I have done this.
Okay. Thank you.
I've done it.
Okay, Paul, please say what you want to say.
Hello. I just want to say that what as happens, was geschieht in Deutschland, geschieht auch in America. Es ist die ganze Welt. It happens everywhere in Russland, in Russland, in America. It is the apotheosis of the coward. And people, they want to, who is the most cowardly, is given a praise. And it is against the German people who were Tapferkeit in the past, their great-grandfathers on this. And today in America, we suffer too from Mexicans. They kill us, they murder us, and they verstümmelt unsere Leute. And that mm-hmm. is never said on the news because...
Well, of course not.
It will... Hello?
Yes, I just said of course not. Kairos, no, what do you have to say about that? He says the problem is the cowardice, and we're in the age of the coward.
Yeah, I think it's kind of true. It's maybe cowardice not to stand up against it, but everyone has to lose something, and this is what how they hold us in prison. If we want to be free, we have to give up our lives. Yes, when we have families or children, they are in danger if we say what we think. But if we do not say what we think, they are even more in danger. So
I don't think we should leave our children fatherless or motherless, and I don't think that we should go to prison if we don't have to. But there is such a thing if enough people do something. I think you might have said this to me recently. It certainly has been said enough that if 1,000 people broke the Holocaust law or broke the Hitler law or whatever, well, maybe 1,000 they could process into their jails. But if 10,000 did, they couldn't. I mean, if everybody would stand up. And this is why we have to use means to reach people to increase the number of people who don't want to be remain in this cowardly position, or maybe educate them that it is cowardly, or what the results are. But I don't think that someone like you, Kairos, should go and give up your life for this, because it wouldn't do enough. But it's because it's true that the people who have stood up bravely are in jail. They're in jail.
We have hundreds of political prisoners in Germany, and every day I hear on the news from some land in Asia, they have no democracy, and they have this political prisoners and the opposition and blah blah blah. And I think it's the same here, but of course they don't tell us, and it is. Something like they always say in the right corner in Germany, they always say, yeah, we are cowards. Why do we not kill the Turks back and so on? Yeah, why don't we do it? Because it is not us. It is not our habit to kill people. It is not our habit to rot together in gangs and do crimes and something. We are an honest people. We are a pride people, right? But we are people of that abides the law. And the problem is that the law itself became our enemy. And this is what most of the German people does not understand, that the law and the state are no longer there to save us, but they are have become enemies. And as Paul said, it is not only here in Germany, it is everywhere. It is not called New German Order, but New World Order. They do it everywhere. They use the law, they use the state, everything. They use everything we believe in to control us.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Paul, for your call. Let's go ahead now, Kairos, and play your music, because we have enough time before the break to do it. And do you want to tell us a little bit again what it is? It's called Children of the North. It's by a group called Carpe Diem. correct?
Correct. And it is about unity, liberty, and pride.
Okay. And you read the words to us. Did you finish reading them to us?
I'm finished with reading.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike, would you play that song now? It's a little over 5 minutes, folks. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy it.
Des alten Manns, er zieht so von Ort zu Ort. Von überall kommt man zum Marktplatz gerannt und lauscht dort seinem Wort. Tage von einem vergangenen Volk. Die Einigkeit hat es getragen und die sind sich Trugels in Stolz. Die Freiheit war das höchste Gut und Treue war höchste Pflicht. Sein Glaube gab den größten Mut und Freiheit kannte es nicht. Dass nach einiger Zeit das Böse kam über das Land. Ein fremder Gott brachte unendliches Leid, die Zwietracht, sie nahm überhand. Das Leben war fortan verachtet und auch das Gesetz der Natur. Die Seele des Volkes umnachtet, weil es seine Götter verlor. Mit dem weißen Haar. Und auch ihre Eltern, sie hören gespannt, denn seine Legenden sind wahr. Drum höre diesem Lied gut zu und höre auf dein Gespür. Denn aus diesem Volk, das stammst auch du, die Götter, sie leben. We'll be right back.
This is the first time I've heard that with my earphones on, and boy, it sounds terrific. We ended just in time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with the last half hour of this program. You were just listening to Children of the North by Carpe Diem. We'll be back with Kyra.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Well, it is an interesting day today, March 19th. First of all, today marks 10 years since the end of Operation Anaconda, Afghanistan. This was the first large-scale, non-special operations battle for U.S. troops in Afghanistan since the war started. The mission? To destroy al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. It would not be the last, and many more would be launched for the very same reason. Today's also the ninth anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, a war that lasted 8.5 years, cost tens of thousands of lives, I'm not even going to tell you how much money, and leaves many people today still pretty confused about its mission. And today also marks 1 year since U.S. and NATO forces launched airstrikes in Libya. About the mission itself, the case for war was made using R2P, the responsibility to protect. It wasn't regime change, but that indeed is what happened. And we also heard predictions like weeks, not months, in terms of a timeline for Libya. It took a lot longer, as we know now. So today we want to take a look back at the history and look ahead to the consequences. David Swanson is a campaigner with Roots Action. He's in Charlottesville, Virginia, to help us dissect this. David, let's start with Libya 1 year later. What was solved there?
It is remarkable indeed that we have so many wars that the anniversaries pile up on top of each other now. I don't want the 10,000s of deaths in the war in Iraq to go without comment. By any rational calculations, over 1 million deaths, we have to include the Iraqis along with the Americans. In Libya, we indeed saw a war launched without Congress, with an intent on avoiding any authorization from Congress whatsoever, although it could easily have been had. A war launched on the basis of a UN resolution that did not authorize regime change, but that was used for regime change, so that we now have humanitarian warriors pushing for war in Syria and elsewhere, arguing that the UN got NATO into Libya for regime change when it did no such thing. We have Libya held up now, along with Kosovo and the first Gulf War, as a good war, as a humanitarian war. And no explanation of the number of lives killed by NATO and by the U.S. in the process, the lawlessness of the war, the lawlessness of murdering the ruler of a country, and the chaos that resulted, so that there is no expectation in the foreseeable future of a stable democracy with protection for human rights in Libya, as might have been predicted from the fact that we've never achieved such a thing with our bombs before.
And you were talking a little bit about how there are some people who are using Libya as an example for why, you know, when we are protecting citizens, that action is a good thing. But there's another legacy here as well that seems to be.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager. My guest is Kairos, and we just listened to a piece of music that he wanted to play that means a lot to him before we went on the break. And I want to say about it, though he has some a little criticism about the quality over this particular broadcast, but I didn't notice it because I'm wearing earphones, and I felt it just sounded very intimate to me. And I said every time I've listened to that, I really respond to it, and I don't think that any white European person can hear music like that and not respond in a way that they feel it's in down into their very soul. Because this is, I think, our kind of music, our music from that comes from long ago, some in a sense, and we are all connected with that. So what do you have to say about it? What would you like to say about it, Kairos?
This cry for Odin is a cry to the heart. This is, like you said, Odin represents our ancestors, those we have to despise by law. Of course, Odin will not return. And if he does, he will not rescue us. That this is not the matter. If you read about paganism, if I may suggest on the site www.burzum.org, burzum.org, there you can look under library, there is a series called Paganism. German versions that we translated are also available. And in part 4, Sacrifices, the author of Vikernes shows us that in the pagan worldview, nothing that you got from the gods is yours. When our forefathers had asked the gods to help them, let's say, in a fight, then all booty belonged to the gods. Only what you achieve with your own strength and hand is yours. And this it's the same with our struggle in Germany and in all white countries. We must not wait, not for Odin, not for some leaders, not for Russia or China to free us. If we do not free ourselves from our slavery, we always will be slaves. If we wait until Russia or China helps us against our friends, our so-called friends, we will change one prison to another. So what to do? If we will learn again to honor our ancestors, the ancient gods will awake. Trust me, they will awake again. Gods never die. They just sleep. Why should they wake up and watch this misery? It is our duty to present them a country and a world that is worthy for them. The truth is, Odin will free us from slavery when we free ourselves. Where I think that the old gods will come back, I believe that the Jewish God is dying. Christianity, this Jewish way of Christianity, lost its credibility, not because the teaching of the Christ, but because of the Jewish influence in it. Yahweh, the old God of the Old Testament, is a vengeful and evil spirit. He's not identic with the Father the Christ spoke of. Actually, I do not believe that the Christ was Jewish either. He came from Galilee, the land of the non-Jews, from Nazareth. Like Ashkenaz, this means from Germany. Jesus was a non-Jew. He said that the Jews were the children of the devil. His fiercest enemies were the rabbis, those who dictate the columns of Judaism.
Okay.
So I think,
go ahead.
I think Christians and pagans must not fight each other, but Christians have to accept that our common ancestry is more important than ideological matters. Every time I say that Christianity is dying, Christians tell me, yeah, but only in the West. Okay, what else is there? What do I care about growing Christendom in Africa or Asia? These are not my people. I only care about Europeans, about whites, and other Europeans should do the same. And more, it is perfectly okay when I care more for Germans than for Norwegians or Englishmen, just as it is okay that I care more about my family than about others. It has proven to be true that every discussion about ideological matters, if politics, religion, or philosophical views, does divide us. Why is it? Why is it so important to people that we think alike? Why can't they just endure that another person has different views? Why can't they just say, okay, we do not think alike, but after all, we are kinsmen?
Those people. I was going to say the Jews and the communists can't allow that because they want to take over the world. So they are the ones who insist that there be one narrative, their narrative, and everybody agrees to it.
This is it. Universalism is the problem. The key to understand why people hold ideological views higher than their own tribe is the history of universalistic religions. Our pagan ancestors just had their own gods. Every people had their gods. Even Yahweh was seen as the god of the Jews and as one spirit upon another, upon others. The gods of the pantheon could exist side by side, and so could the people. When Rome conquered the world, it was not to tell the people about their gods. In the contrary, when Caesar came to Gaul, he wrote that the Gauls adore Mercurius the most. It did not matter to him that Toitatus was the god of the Celtic tribe. Caesar just interpreted Toitatus as Mercurius, as he had similar competences.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, now it should be clear by now that you are not Christian. You're not attracted to Christianity. You are attracted to your form of paganism, but you do respect all white people for whatever religious choices they make, and you can respect a great deal about Christianity, right?
You see, you have to know a little bit of my history. I was an atheist for a long time. More of that, I hated God. It was so hard to learn that there is something. I never really doubted it, but I denied it with force, with anger. I was the poster boy for an atheist. It was like a moral question for me that there could be no God in such a bad world. All this is mostly Marxistic propaganda, but I did not know this when I was young. So I hated Christianity. I was raised as a Roman Catholic, and I experienced this religion as a mendacious, as a bigoted, hypocritical. I have learned to respect white Christians and their beliefs now. But Christianity, as I experience it, is a cauldron of shame, guilt, and greedy dreams, multiculturalism, and Judaism, just like everything else in Germany. The Protestant part of Christianity in Germany is even worse. I have to thank deeply Christians Manfred Kleine Hartlage that they showed me the way to the divine. But I did not become a Christian again. I'm now a modern pagan.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is not that we have different views. The problem is when someone says, this is my one God. If you call him Yahweh or Allah, he cannot stand other gods beside him, this evil spirit. And so his followers cannot stand other people beside them. This is not all Christians. On the contrary, most Christians are very tolerant. But this is another problem with the tolerance of the races. The Muslims have to convert them all, and Christians for 2,000 years they converted them all. So the religious war, a thing that was not known in ancient times, came to the world with the universalistic religions. But Christianity is no longer the universalistic ideology. It's globalism. Christendom is used as an opener, as Christians are told to love everybody, even non-whites. But the truth is that those people who are not Christian, who hate Christianity, are brought forward. As Christianity is identified with the West, the logic of globalism dictates that it has to be pushed back. And we let this happen because we cannot agree on the color of crap. Yeah, we fight our ideological wars, left against right, idealists against materialists, Christians against pagans, women against men, and even children against their parents.
You know, our religion has to be; it cannot be universalist. Whatever religion we are comfortable with or choose, we have to make it a religion of our race. And this is the distinction that I make. And this is the problem with, like, someone like Manfred, I can't think of his middle, Hartlege. I respect him very much, but he accepts the universal quality of Christianity. And this is where I can't agree with him.
The solution is not that anyone says which ideology we have to follow. That would be slavery. If we all come together under Christendom or paganism or something, we have to fight these struggles that we are fighting, but in a way that does not weaken us, in a way it makes us stronger. And how do we reach this goal? We have to put race above religion, ancestry above politics, family above our egoistic goals. When we agree that we are of one kind and that we are united against all the others, then we can discuss ideological matters without hanging on each other's throats. And this is the point. Put race above religion, care not about what someone thinks, but who he is. And this is something that most of the modern Germans and the modern Europeans can't even think. They can't.
Well, it's been demonized. This is really demonized as racist, and racist is probably the worst word in as far as what people don't want to be called of all. It's worse than probably Nazi, because Nazi maybe is a little too far fetched. But people, they call people, to be a racist in today's world is to be the worst thing that you can be. And yet we have to be, we have to think racially. So this is what we're up against.
Yeah. And you see, besides Christianity and Islam, there's a third monotheistic religion who dictates this anti-racism. And it's an as universalistic as the others. Everyone who says Judaism does not convert people is either a liar or blind. They do not make us all Jews because we are not good enough in their eyes. We are just cattle. Goyim means cattle. But they need us as slaves. And so they cannot stand that we pray to our own gods, have our own countries or on mythology or on religion. The New World Order is a world where the satanic demon Yahweh rules about everything because all other gods died along with their people. It's hell on earth.
I want to invite people, give them an opportunity once again to call and talk to Kairos. The phone number is 1-855-477-2283, toll free, if you want to call in. The lines are open. All right. What more do you think? What more do you want to say to the listeners about why you prefer paganism, or what you think it will do for us, or how it can unite us, or whatever.
When I speak about God or the ancient gods or the divine, as I say it, I mean that God for me is not a personal deity. The divine is everywhere in nature, in our people, in our blood, in our soil. Every people has a soul of its own, just like the individuals. To nourish this soul is to serve the divine. We Germans are the people of the poets and thinkers, so this is our way to the divine. We research, we build technologies, we write great stories and operas. Everything we do is a prayer. Everything around us is divine. When we let ourselves feel it, the people of the earth are the souls of God, Herder said, the great German philosopher. And this is what paganism is for me. Everything is divine, and everything we do, if we do it right, is a service to the gods. And I think the ancient gods, like Odin and Freya, and they represent what our ancestors thought about themselves. They represent pride and courage and every good thing in human. And Yahweh is the opposite of all this. Even Tacitus said it 2,000 years before our time. Tacitus, the great Roman writer, said that the God of the Jews is the opposite of all other gods. our gods are positive, have a positive use of the word, and they are a kind of they represent the soul of our people. Yeah, and as Herder says, the peoples of the earth are the thoughts of God. So mixing these people is not only a crime; it is against God's plan.
I was reading on Burzum, that the www.burzum.org, in the library on paganism, and it said this fellow said that. What were you just saying now? I just forgot what I was going to. I didn't forget it. He said that. What were you just saying, Cairo?
That the peoples of the earth are the sorts of God, and the ancient gods are just the representation of the good in our people.
Yeah, well, I will. I forget what he said. I can't quite bring that back now. But I think that that the gods represent ideas that we have, and I think that our gods, that we create, that we, I don't see gods as real beings, but I see them as real powerful forces, and they do represent what we are. And so every group has their own, gods in a sense. They have their own ideas, and I do believe in individual souls. And in group soul, that we have, that say Germans have a group soul, and Europeans, white Europeans have a even larger group soul, and so on. So this is how we're all tied together. But I don't think that we share the same gods as people of other races. I think race is really the dividing line. I know what it was now. Yes, it was race mixing. In his pagan articles, he said that race mixing was the greatest sin. And this is what the Christian identists also say, that race mixing is the greatest sin. So there's a lot of similarities amongst religious beliefs and philosophies or religious groups that they don't recognize the similarity, and often they don't want to, because they denounce one another. But a lot of the ideas are the same.
For most Christians, it is really hard to neglect the Jewish part of Christianity. They talk about Judeo-Christianity, about the Jewish roots of Christianity, and so on. But it's all a falsery. The Bible was so often written. How do you say it? It was forced by so many people, and all these stories about Jesus doing all this stuff, they are all lies. Jesus was a great man, I think, and he wanted to fight against the evil that Judaism was and still is. He was not a Jew who claimed to be the Messiah. This is a Jewish thought. The Messiah in Jewish thinking is the same as the Antichrist in Christian thinking. The Messiah is not someone like Jesus, a spiritual a prophet, but the Messiah in Jewish thinking is someone who rules the world. And this is what a New World Order means, that not one person, it is like a new era, a new age where they will rule above all the world. This is what they want.
Well, let me just say that I'm going to repeat so I'm understood. We've got a caller here, and while he's putting the caller on, I'm going to say this, that I think in many philosophies and in many religions, the truest form of it, that you do not mix races. Mixing races is the lowest thing that can be done. It pollutes the soul, and it pollutes the human, the race. And so the highest level is to have a pure race and not to mix races. And this This, we have to say, this teaching or this truth is absolutely turned on its head by the Jewish New World Order, and it'd be for and the desire to destroy the white race is turned on its head to tell us that this is the absolute worst thing, and the best thing, the good thing, is to love everyone equally, to see everyone the same, and to therefore mix and match yourselves all up. You know, do race mixing. And I think we have to be very firm on this. All right, caller, are you there, and can you say your name?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Carolyn.
Hi.
I was listening in.
Oh, you didn't tell
me. No, I think that what you were saying is absolutely right. I've been listening to Ty, and he's like echoing the same things I've been saying for years, you know?
You were listening to who? Who is this? Is John, right?
Yeah.
Okay, John. Who did you mention? Ty? Are you talking about Kairos?
Ty Muros, yes.
Okay. Did you have anything you wanted to say to him?
Well, I was just saying that I think that most of what I've heard from him is like right on. I mean, it's like spot on stuff.
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, he's Kairos has an extra hard battle because he's German and lives in Germany, where he wouldn't live anywhere else. But, I mean, he has a harder battle than we do. What do you have any comment? We've only got about 4 minutes or 3 or 4 minutes left, Kairos. So what else would you like to get across in that time?
Well, I could tell you a little story. On the biggest counter-jihadist forum in Germany, a Jewish commentator recently wrote that Israel has a special unit to observe everything that is said in Western media. And the critic on Israel was too much. And in the internet, the anti-Jewish websites would grow like mushrooms. Never again would be a duty for them. It could end badly. We would be on the road to Paris, then hastily with the foot on the gas, he said. Here's a Jew that is acting in the counter-jihad, a movement that claims to be the only hope for the Western civilization. And he says that when the media is too anti-Jewish and we discuss critical views of Judaism in the internet, Israel will nuke us. Okay, he's not the president of Israel, but he shows us the true face of the chosen people.
Okay, yeah, well, we know that their intention is to... really, we really have to face up to, we can't say it to most people because they don't believe it. They'll think we're crazy. But the idea of the Jewish people is to rule over everyone else. And that means they have to destroy all the power of the whites. They have to destroy the soul of the whites. And, and we have to be aware of that. And just once again, you know, the highest good is to keep the races separate and pure. That's
every experience.
That's absolutely correct, Carolyn. Absolutely correct.
Every experience with them leads to the conclusion that there will be no peace with them. They think they deserve to live here with us and lead us. They are like fleas that, as I can imagine, they think they deserve to be on the dog's fur. Even more, they like fleas that think they deserve to direct the dog. There's no other way than to expose them and their evil plans, to tell everyone about it, even if they do not believe us. They think we are crazy. Okay, we have to go on because we are right. We tell the truth. And then we have to expel them from every important position of society. We do not want to exterminate them. We just want them out. They forced us into two world wars to get their precious Israel. So let them please live there.
Okay. Kairos, I want to thank you, John, for calling in. We've got 30 seconds. Kairos, I want to thank you so much for coming on the program, for being up in the middle of the night to do this.
It was a pleasure.
Well, it was a pleasure for me, too, and I'm sure the listeners enjoyed it. And I look forward to maybe another opportunity like this coming up where you can come on And we will. It's really too difficult to talk about what to do on the radio, but I think we get close to it in what the message that we have to put out. So, once again, listeners, thank you. Thanks to Kairos, and we will be back next week with another Heretics Hour program. Good night.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.